诸位菩萨早安了。
Good morning, everybody. 阿弥陀佛。
那我们今天要接续上次是六月初讲哈，六月初那次好像那个 Skype 没有弄好哈。我今天会稍微复习一点点之后呢，接着讲大圣大集地藏十轮经，讲到第二轮哈。
We're going to pick up from where we left off back in June. And in June last time, I think the recording or the online broadcast was, there was some issue, problem with it. So today I will actually recapitulate what we talked about last time briefly. And then we're going to further delve deeper into chapter 2 of the Sutra of Ten Chakra of Chittigarbha.
好。六月也感冒咳嗽，然后九月也感冒又咳嗽，这个要讲地藏经系列的哈，还是要有点福报。那我尽量哈想办法不要咳了，那你们也忍耐一下。
So I caught the cold and I was coughing in June when I was giving that talk, and now in September I caught the cold and start coughing again. So it appears that one has to have accumulated quite a bit of a merit.And blessing to be able to teach this sutra. So if I cough during the talk, please bear with me, and I will appreciate it.
Okay. 那地藏十轮经哦，你从经里面就知道说十轮是这部经的重点。好，那我们上次已经讲到第一轮，那在这个经里面呢，佛陀用同步的用。王轮就是说你今天想要成为一个国家的国王，你应该会怎么做，然后再同步就是同平行的去比对，如果你今天想要成佛，那应该要怎么做。所以我们就会同时讲到第一佛轮，第一王轮，第一佛轮讲，然后就顺序一直讲到第十王轮跟第十佛轮。
So, as you can tell by the title of the sutra, the ten chakras are the key essence of the sutra. And, in this sutra, the Buddha drew a parallel analogy between, the chakras, the virtues and, deeds of kingly affairs.And to liken it and use it as an analogy to illustrate that of Buddhas. So these two threads of comparison would go in tandem from the first chakra all the way to the tenth chakra, starting out from kingly affairs and then alluding to the chakra of the Buddha.
好，那第一王轮呢，就比喻说一个国家呢，好。不能没有国王，如果你没有国王呢，你一定会被人家侵略的，大家就来掠夺你的土地嘛，然后来伤害你的子民，所以要有一个国王，而且这个国王必须是大家都认同，大家都觉得他就是最好的国王才会服从嘛，不然假设你这个国王不好又是个暴君，那铁定下面的人民又要起来革命。好，那同样的佛轮，第一佛轮来讲呢，就是在我们这个娑婆世界，其实人心不是很好，然后大家乱七八糟无所适从，这个时候呢佛陀想要来帮助我们成佛，这个时候一定要有一个要有娑婆世界要有一个教主，好，告诉大家说他就是我们的领导，就是我们学习的榜样，那听从这个老师，听从佛陀的教诲，我们就可以成佛，这样我们就不会被外道的一些或是一些邪说呢，来把我们就是引到别的地方去。
So in the first chakra, regarding the king chakra, in a nutshell, it's explaining that in this world, any kingdom, there needs to be a king which is accepted and acknowledged, obeyed by its people. Without a king, the country, the nation will become vacant and invites other countries for invasion. And also, this king has to be just and kind. Had it been a tyrant, then people will, there will be chaos in the country, in the state, and people will rebel against this tyrannical king. So similarly, with regard to the Buddha chakra, the first chakra, it's basically talking about how this world that we're living in is a samsara world, and so people's minds are unsettled and defiled. And so in this case, we need a Buddha to help sentient beings and become a leader and teacher that is recognized and obeyed by people, the students. So the Buddha will serve as a model to demonstrate the correct virtues, the ways of reaching the Buddhahood. And by having a Buddha in this world, then we can also avoid people from going on deviant path and having erroneous views.
那么第二王轮呢，当一个国王登基了以后呢，他要做的三个面向，第一个就是说他必须要保护他的江山，对吧？好，那要怎么保护他的帝王的江山呢？他必须要有一个军队能够抵抗外面来的侵略，然后你要有很强的一个就是战斗力，让大家就不会来侵略你。那第二个面向就是说，好，你把江山都保护好了，这是在这里面的居民要过生活，要遮风避雨，所以你必须要教大家怎么样盖房舍啊，怎么样能够在这个土地上生活。那第三个面向是基本的需求，遮风避雨，饮食有了之后呢，你还要怎么样，还要安大家的心，教大家怎么样学习工商杂役，怎么样让自己的生活过得更多彩多姿，更美满，这样子。
The second kingly chakra has three different aspects. The first one, to be a king, you have to first protect your boundary and to prevent invasions from other countries. And in order to do so,the king will have to study and establish a troop and to study about battles and the art of fighting. And once the boundary has been protected, then the king will have to then focus on the livelihoods of its people. And for example, how to build houses and tend to the field so that the basic livelihoods of people can be met.The third aspect is once livelihood has been well taken care of, then the king will then turn to settling the people's minds and teaching them ways such as commerce or different kinds of craftsmanship so that they can have a mean of accumulating wealth or to better their lives.
我九月的时候就是飞了四个地方，然后飞了三大洲了，就是亚洲、美洲跟欧洲。那我去了一趟罗马，去梵蒂冈，因为我们就是接续2015年天主教跟佛教的一个对谈之后呢，有一个合作的计划需要教宗来支持认可，所以我们一组人呢又飞到了梵蒂冈。那这次因为梵蒂冈呢面对了那个什么很棘手的一些在美国有一些棘手的事情，所以我们就是在那个广场的台上，然后由他们的 Archbishop 来报告这个专案，但是我们还是见到了教宗，拍了一张照片。但是我比较惨的是呢，我这次去罗马呢一起就全身的，就是我所有的欧元就都被偷了。然后呢，我被偷的时候呢，后来跟我一起同行的法师跟菩萨就说，后来我们回想就是有人请我帮他拍照，然后我在帮他拍照的时候就一堆人围在我身边，我是没有发现的。 然后呢，他先开我的贴身的包包，前面开没发现钱，后面再开，就然后就把整包钱都偷走了哈。然后当下我的，当我发现的时候，是想要买糖果回来给大家吃了哈，就发现没有钱可以付，然后 credit card 也被偷了，然后就当下我就觉得说，为什么这样子的钱背在这里被偷了，我都没有警觉性呢？那我是后知后觉才发现说，原来那个照相的过程一堆人围着我，好，然后我居然没有觉知哎。
So this September, I have been traveling around. I went to 4 different places, covering 3 different continents. And one of these places, Vatican in Rome, there was a collaborative project that needs to be approved by the Pope. So we were there, but during our stay, because there were some touchy issues, scandals that arise here in the States, so we only were able to see the Archbishop who oversaw.
We see the Pope.
Oh, okay. But the discussion was with the Archbishop, but we were fortunately able to take a photo taken with the Pope. Anyhow, during this trip, something happened to me where all my Euro dollars were stolen. And
credit card.
And credit cards as well. And so we were, the people and all the other, nuns with me, we were raking our head, and then we think back and realized that, oh, that the incident probably took place when I was asked by someone to take photo for a group of people. And during that photo, snapping, moments, I was surrounded by a group of people. And someone apparently had opened the zipper. I was wearing my pouch in right next to me. Opened the front zipper, found nothing, and then the person then opened the back zipper, one that's close to me, and took all the money and the credit card. And I wasn't aware of it at all until when I was going to buy some candy to bring back to share with you, and I looked at my purse and everything is gone. And what was most unsettling to me, alarming to me, was that this purse was right, it's next to my body, and yet I wasn't aware, I wasn't alert of what was happening to me.
然后知道的人就跟我说，难道，包括我的大学同学就说，难道你不知道罗马的治安很不好吗？你应该要懂得保护你的钱财，应该放这里，放那里，放里面。然后告诉我一大堆的 people 哈，然后第一个我忘记了这件事情哈，所以我没有警觉心哈，然后我发现说，哎呦，这么贴近的财物你都没有办法保护它，就说你没有能力保护它哈，那这让我觉得说，不要讲帝王了哈，帝王那个江山这么大哈，那要保卫这个江山哦，哇，这真的是很不容易哈、哦。那我们要保卫我们自己的财物，都这么不容易哈、哦。所以我就觉得说，接下去的佛轮哈、哦、是非常重要的、哦。
So when I recall this incident to other people, even my classmates from college, they were surprised and they were yelling at me, saying that have you forgotten the crime rate, the high crime rate in Rome, why didn't you take better care of your possession? And truth be told, I have forgotten about the number of robberies and thieves in Rome, which is a very well-known fact. And what it also made me think is that for something, the possession, the money that was so close to my physical body, so near me, the proximity is so small, I still wasn't able to take care of it. Then this leads me to think about the second chakra, that a king has to protect his boundary. So I wasn't even able to take care of something that close, my own possession, my own body, and a king has to take care of its boundary. So the job is indeed very challenging, and this also points to the significance and importance of the Buddha chakra.
那第二佛轮呢？哈，佛陀哈，释迦牟尼佛被就是推举到娑婆世界当我们的教主。好，那他的教化事业也有三个面向。哈，第一个呢是要修定，第二个习诵，第三个迎福。好，那我们接下来要介绍的就是，修定有十种方法。哈，那佛陀的教化哈，他没有说他不是说哦，我要把佛教跨遍五大洲哈，要多少个信徒啊哈，然后变成一个王国这样，不是的。佛教的疆土上次讲过了，佛教的疆土是哪里？我们要保卫的疆土是什么？是我们的心。佛陀教我们要怎么保卫我们的心，不会被所有的外境内境打倒。所以第一个要教我们的是怎么保卫我们的心，教我们的十种方法来修定。好，然后另外两个也会接续的讲，所以我今天呢看看可不可以讲多少种，就是修定业轮有十种。
So the second Buddha chakra talks about the Buddha comes into this samsara world and expounds his teaching, and his teaching also encompasses three different aspects. The first one is the cultivation of samadhi, of concentration, and the second one is the cultivation and studying of recitation, and the third aspect is the cultivation of merits and virtue. So when Buddha came to this world and started his teaching, he did not have any ambition setting out to conquer X amount of land or to extract X number of followers. That wasn't his goal at all. The kind of boundary that Buddha is teaching us to protect is actually our own mind. That is the land or the boundary that needs to be protected and guarded. So in this second Buddha chakra, then Buddha then talks about 10 different methods of cultivating samadhi as a way to help to settle and protect the boundary. And this is what we're going to get into today, and we'll see how many we'll be able to cover.
那在我开始讲这个十种方法的时候呢，我必须要先讲在先，因为经文里面一开头就说何等为十，然后有十种何等为十，他就开始讲了，他并没有很清楚的说第一第二第三第四然后一直第十。那又很少人正式的讲这部经，那我参考了孟参老和尚的开示，那他也是讲第二佛轮，讲主要是讲属习观，那他也没有很清楚的讲说第一第二第三，而且他那本书编辑的时候我还觉得他的标点符号段落我觉得应该可以再修改，因为我不知道是谁编的那我要讲的是说呢，我今天要讲的呢纯粹是我呢揣摩了又揣摩揣摩了又揣摩，然后根据我自己学佛的一个自己目前的水平跟 background 那我就把它硬是把它弄成一二三四到十然后呢就是供大家参考这不一定是最正确的因为这个科判以前都会有祖师大德做嘛那这个所以我常常记 PowerPoint 就记好几个版本，因为我睡了一觉起来我又觉得好像应该要这样子，然后再过一下下我又觉得吃完晚饭又觉得好像又应该这样所以呢今天是这个第二佛轮的十个修定的方法是纯属供大家参考那希望以后有祖师大德高僧再出来讲这样，但是呢这十点是蛮棒的一个 focus 我们在修行任何方法的时候它都是一个很重要的一个 point 要突破的。
So I have to first raise, there's a caveat about this 10 different methods I need to confess. So when I was studying this sutra, preparing to give the talk, the sutra actually hasn't been taught extensively by a lot of people, and the only version I was able to find was by Master Meng Chan. And so initially in the text of the sutra itself, the text goes something like, there are 10 different methods, and then the prose, this paragraph just ran on. They didn't bullet point which 10 methods is going to be explained, so it just all sort of ran together. And even in Master Meng Chan's version, in his commentary, he focused on the method of counting breath. And to be honest, when I read the commentary, I even thought maybe some of the sections of the punctuations of the sentences were maybe a little bit off, and maybe some improvements could be made. So what I'm trying to say is, these 10 methods is what I was able to distill from the text and from reading the commentary. I'm not saying this is the most correct version. It's what I have interpreted and studied. So oftentimes when I was preparing the PowerPoint for these talks, I would make several changes, and there are different versions of this PowerPoint. And sometimes I will, after one night of sleep, I feel that the division should be made this way. After eating lunch, then I feel that maybe it should go the other way. So I'm presenting this as a sort of introduction for something for you to think about as a reference. It's by no means the golden standard of commentary. But still, the 10 points that I have extracted, these 10 different methods, I do think that they are a good way to focus our understanding and reading of the sutra. And they also are 10 very critical points to focus on when we practice samadhi.
导师说哈，这十种方法讲这一小小段哈，讲第二轮佛轮呢，几乎把佛陀有关于禅修的最重要的方法跟教义都写在里面，所以我也不可能每一个地方讲得非常的深入哈，但是我尽量就是至少可以点到一些重点，让大家回去可以参考一下。
So actually, these 10 different methods actually encompass, even in the very short paragraph, encompass a lot of what Buddha have taught about practice of samadhi. So it's beyond my ability nor our limited time to go into each one of them in depth. But I'm just showing them here quickly so that you can use it as a reference for your own practice.
第一个修定的方法呢，它是说我们必须要正观察，好，正确的观察我们所有哈六道众生哦，因为我们就是诸有啦，就是我们可以察觉的所有的事跟身哈，就是指我们的身跟心呢有六种境界。
So the first method is to correctly contemplate the six states of all sentient beings, which includes the physical state as well as consciousness.
那六种境界哈，有分外境界跟内境界。好，那也就是说，我们的身跟心会接触到的遇到的状况，有分外六种、内六种。那外六种呢，很简单哈，在我们的佛教教义里面有讲十八戒，也就是说，我们的六根哈，六根是属于我们的身吧，对吧哈？眼耳鼻舌身意，六根呢，接触到外面的外境的六尘的时候呢，会产生六识的作用。好，那六尘呢，就是我们的外六境。 好，有没有天气很热啦，这个人很美啦，哈，声音很吵啊，什么，就是这种境界是外六境。那内六境是什么呢？就是我们六识心识的反应，哈。
So these six different states include the internal and external phenomena that are experienced by the body and mind. They're divided into internal phenomena and external. And they can also be further explained by the 18 different realms, which is a combination of the six sensory organs, the six sensory objects, and the six consciousness. So the six sensory organs are our eyes, ears, nose, etc., and six sensory objects are things that's been seen, sounds that's been heard, and taste that's been tasted, etc. And so those are considered the six external phenomena. And interacting with the six sensory organs, and it creates the six consciousness. The six consciousness are then the six internal phenomena.
像我就是没有正观察，人家要来偷我的钱，就那么一堆人围着我，我居然也没有觉察，但哪天就是说，这么明显的一个境界，都来到你的身边了，你还没有觉察，就很奇怪，就是这个修定第一步就这么粗的，都很，就是说你就发现你自己呢，真的是觉照力真的是很差的，这是属于外。那内呢，内就比较复杂了，这是八识，我们的唯识学讲的八识，等一下再讲。
So take myself as an example of what happened in Rome. What I lacked at that time was the rightful contemplation or samadhi, that all these people actually came surrounding me already and took away my stuff. I wasn't even aware of it. So it just goes in showing that my attainment in terms of concentration and observing, being observant of what's around me is really not so great, that I wasn't even able to attend to such coarse phenomena, such obvious events. So that is more related to external phenomena. As to when it comes to the internal phenomena, it becomes a lot more complicated, which we're going to go into next.
但是什么叫做正观察呢？讲到观，第一个需要提出来提醒大家，就是其实我在帮他拍照的时候，就是因为太专注了，所以呢我没有觉察到人家正在做的事情。那修定绝对不是说你专注在某一点，定，尤其大圣修的定，它是全面的觉知，但是它不为所动。好，那我呢是很专心在这帮他照相嘛，因为你要拿个相机，你就眼睛，你的眼睛就是看着，但是你周围就没看到。好，那这不是正观察的，就是我在照相的时候不是正观察。正观察其实是全面的。
So, a clarification about the right contemplation. When one is the right way of practicing samadhi is that when you are practicing it, you are not merely focusing on one point. Your ability to be aware, awareness is actually, it will actually encompass your entire surrounding while not being attached to any one particular phenomenon. Whereas in my case, I was very focused. My eye was very focused on taking the photo and my mind was also focused on that. But where I failed was then I lost track of what was surrounding me. And that is why I'm saying that it's not the right type of contemplation.
好，那至于内六境是什么？那以唯识学来讲呢，它把我们的心就是讲内在嘛，它用八个识来形容我们的心，那也针对八个功能来形容我们的心。那前六识就是眼耳鼻舌身识，再加第六意识， 好，是前六世。那第七是莫那世，第八世阿赖耶世。可是第七世跟第八世是很，第七世是很难觉察的，好，那第八世就更不要讲。所以七八世一般不会成为我们修行的一个focus， 而且它也不是境界，没办法觉察。但是内六世，前一到六世，前六世是我们修行的重点，尤其是第六世。
So what are the internals, internal phenomenon? According to the school of mind consciousness only, they divide the mind into a consciousness.It describes the mind as having a consciousness. It's eight different kind of functions. The first six are related to the eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, and the sixth one is the mind. And the seventh consciousness is mana.The seventh consciousness mana, the eighth is araya consciousness. The seventh one is very hard to be detected. Seventh one is very hard to be detected. And needless to say, the eighth one. So the seventh and eighth consciousness usually is not our focus of discussion in terms of practice. We can't really focus on that.And they're not even really considered as phenomenon. So to anchor our practice, usually we focus on the first six consciousness and especially the sixth consciousness.
所以呢，在怎么样正观察，当比如说我们的眼耳鼻舌身接触外六境的时候呢，那内六境是怎么分别判断的？好，那这个东西呢就必须要能够正观察，比如说当我们看到喜欢吃的冰淇淋的时候，我们这次去意大利，那吃素的没什么好吃的，每天就是吉拉头、披萨 and pasta， 吃冰淇淋，即便是咳嗽感冒还是给它吃下去，因为想说这辈子大概也不会再来了，然后当地的吉拉头还是好好的给他吃一下。当你看到这个冰激凌的时候呢，到底你的内心产生了多少的反应啊？我的就很多了呢，但是我是不管它，就还是把它吃了。就说你看到冰淇淋，因为天气热，你看到冰淇淋，然后又是想象这个冰淇淋是怎么做的，然后它的美味，对吧？然后你每次走去，你就会看到冰淇淋店，走哪去都看到冰淇淋店，所以你在你的内心里面其实是已经有很复杂的反应了，但能不能正观察然后把它 cut 呢？哇，这就要修这个第一个业，第一个轮就这么复杂，就简单两句话讲的东西是非常的多的。那好，你先反应。
So how do we go about practicing and cultivating this right contemplation? Basically, right contemplation is to observe when the mind and ear and the six sensory organs contacting the external phenomena, what kind of reactions arise? How does the mind make differentiations? How are judgments made? So let's just take ice cream as an example. When we were in Rome, everywhere we go, because as vegetarians, there weren't a lot of things for us to eat. So there's pizza and then gelatos.So seeing gelatos, the mind, the kind of, for me, I couldn't even attend to those anymore. I see gelato and I think about how tasty it is. The mind actually goes through a very complex interaction process. First thinking about how the gelato was made, the ingredients and what it's going to taste like. And then everywhere you go, you see gelato here, gelato there, everywhere you go. And so, amidst of this kind of situation with all these temptations, how do we then practice the rightful contemplation? How to analyze what's going on in our own mind and then cutting off the process of grasping?
那所以呢，借由这个所谓的正观察，后面还会讲哈。那我们之前有提到定有十种哈，定有十种呢，就是四禅八定，在三界九地里面有讲到四禅八定哈，就有八个定哈，从一禅天、三禅天哈，一直到无色界的四个定，有八个定哈，然后再加什么？灭受想定是不共外道的，前面八个定是共外道的定，第九定呢是不共外道的灭受想定，然后第十个呢是佛定，叫做什么？首楞严定。好，所以我们总共讲十个定，在这个十个定的过程中呢，好，我们先讲共外道的八个定。前八是像我们是欲界天的，就是六道众生，欲界天的六道众生是第一世到第八世都是 very active 的，就是非常的活跃的哈。只要生你，只要我们修行登初地，第一定，初定第一，一禅天的时候呢，其实我们的舌根，我看到眼根、眼耳身哈，鼻根跟舌根是不起作用的，所以鼻识跟舌识就是已经停止。好，然后到二三四禅天的时候呢，是前五识不起作用，只剩六七八。好，然后到无色界的四定的时候呢，连第六识都不起作用，只剩下七八意识，这是前八定，前面八个定哦。好，所以你看在我们修行的过程中，这还是共外道的修定的过程中，那我们必须要怎么样降服前六识的作用，才可能登什么登，不就是达到这个四禅八定的境界。好，
So there are 10 states of samadhi, 10 states, right?And then which is divided into the four dhyana states and then further eight additional states. And the first ten, are, the first four are the shared by with other, the first eight are shared by, non-Buddhists as well. It's not, strictly related to Buddhism. And once you reach the first dhyana state, the nose and the tongue has already ceased to, the nose and tongue consciousness has already ceased and the processes has been subdued. And once you reach the second, third, and fourth state of dhyana, the first five consciousness has also calmed and quiet. And later on, once you reach the later four,in the realm of formlessness, then the mind, the sixth consciousness has also ceased to be active and function. So this goes to show that in order to reach a high state of samadhi and to practice, cultivate this, we need to first be able to subdue and to be able to control the first six consciousness. That'sOnly the beginning.
那这边要提出来的是，四禅八定，你一出定的时候呢，八识又全部非常的活跃，好，它只是被降服。好，那到首楞严定呢，我们佛教特有的佛定是什么？八识一样作用，但是它是清净的智慧，而不是染污的过程。好，所以首楞严定它是无时不在定中，但是它又没有出定入定的这个过程，就是非常很特别的。
One important clarification is that when you have entered this four dhyana stage or the eight levels of deep samadhi, when you are in the samadhi, everything's all good, but once you leave and exit the samadhi, then the A consciousness starts to become active and run amok again. On the other hand, if you reach the state, the samadhi of at the Buddha level, which we call is the most supreme Suragama samadhi, then your eight consciousness are still, all eight consciousnesses are still fully functioning, yet the mind is not moving, and it's able to perform all the functions. And once you're in that samadhi, there's no point of talking about entering or leaving the samadhi, because you're already in the samadhi at all times. And that's the level of the Buddha.
其实光第一句话就要把唯识学全部搬出来讲，但我把我以前讲唯识学的最后一章，就是我们成佛的这个 roadmap 放出来，主要是想跟大家分享说，虽然八识很复杂，然后 第七第八又那么难的觉察，但是呢他修行的重点在第六意识。好，那所以呢从第六意识，我就是说到四禅八定之后，他还没有办法把我们的意识转，就是污染污的意识转成清净的智慧，原因是第六意识他还没有转世成智。那从第六意识是我们修任何禅定方法的重点，好，是在修第六意识如何把它转成妙观杂志，然后在这个过程从圣位，就是第一地菩萨、初地菩萨到十地菩萨，然后到正等正觉这边呢，他的第六意识从就是不断的进化转化到最后到上品的妙观杂志，在这个第六意识的这个转化的过程中，它同时带动了第七意识和第八意识的进化。
So even just the first sentence in this chapter, it actually requires us to dig out all our understanding that accumulated about the school of consciousness. But even though the system is quite complex, but I would like to share this roadmap with you here.The A consciousness, and to go into and analyze this is quite complicated. However, it's important to keep in mind that the focus of our actual practice, what is tangible for our practice, is to focus on the sixth consciousness. So, when people are entering the sixth dhyana state or the eight levels of concentration, they were still not able to transform the consciousness into wisdom.But by practicing, focusing on the sixth consciousness, then gradually in this process, from the first bhumi, eventually to the tenth bhumi, you're able to transform the consciousness into a wondrous contemplative wisdom. And so it goes through this process of transformation, and furthermore, also as a byproduct, also transforming the seventh and eighth consciousness. So again, this sixth consciousness,is what we can work on and what we need to focus on when we go about our practice.
所以哈，总结一下那个第一句话哈，第一个方法的第一句就是说，我们要正观察，好，我们的身心的外境界跟内境界。好，那外境界当然就是我们这个世间，那内境界是什么？好，就是八识里面，但是最重要的呢？是在前六识的反应，那前六识的反应里面又最重要的是第六意识的反应。
So to summarize very quickly of this first method is to rightfully contemplate the phenomena that arises from the body and mind, the internal and external phenomena. External phenomena is about what's going on in the world, but more importantly, the internal phenomena are the eight consciousnessBut the eight consciousness, we can focus on the first six, and of the sixth consciousness, this consciousness of the mind, is the most important one for us for our practice.
那怎么正观察呢？好，他接下去就讲，他说我跟我所的这个执着呢，是主要的原因。当我们不能心不能定的时候呢，是因为这个我们的内六境 跟外六境，主要的是因为我跟我所的执着。然后呢，业，我们的业力，哦，就好像是一个很有营养的田地，哦，然后呢，再加上就是我们那个田很营养嘛，哦啊，然后你种了一个我所植的因的种子在那边，就很会滋养它，对吧？然后你还有无明，哦，无明把那个田覆盖起来呢，然后再爱为滋润，爱呢就是那个滋润它，然后你就真的被它绑住了，哦，然后这个所有的这个过程之中呢，还要知道说这个内六境外六境都是依他而立，细数众缘，这句话也是讲了非常多的内容。
So how do we go about and practice rightful contemplation? It's explained here in this part of the text that the reason why our mind is unsettled is because we have this attachment to subjectivity and objectivity, and that is the ultimate cause. And while that is the cause and we plant the seed of self-attachment, then our karma, past karma, functions like a fertile ground, and our desires further add water and moisten this ground. As a consequence, it leads to a lack of ease and freedom. This self-attachment has grown and taken root and further bound us to vexations and obstacles. And then the latter part of this phrase is also very crucial, that all of these are actually dependent arising, and it's not self-independent, it is intertwined with various different conditions.
好，所以呢，在这个第一个修定业轮里面，最大要克服的是什么？好，你说啊，我要把我的业好清除。啊，它只是良田嘛，哈，对不对？我不要爱，啊，那它只是滋润嘛，哈。如果你没有那个种子，你下雨有什么关系？好，那你土地很丰壤有什么关系呢？好，最主要是要断那个因，对吧？好，那这个因呢，就是我跟我所，叫做什么？每次郭兴法师讲的，好能所。
So what is our biggest, according to this part of the text, what is the biggest obstacle in our practice, that often we want to go about and to free ourselves? People say, well, then I need to clear all my karma. The karma is merely the fertile ground. So why does it matter? Or some people say that I need to wipe out all my desires. The desires are the rain. Why does it matter that it rains?As long as there's no seed, and this seed of attachment to subjectivity and objectivity, that is the ultimate cause of all the unease and lack of freedom. So we need to first cut off this cause, and then the karma and the desires, those are secondary.
所以呢，喜欢吃冰淇淋有没有关系？啊。
The question is, does it matter that I like to eat ice cream? Is that a problem?
喜欢吃冰淇淋呢，没有关系，只有在什么时候没有关系，就是你没得吃的时候你不会起烦恼，啊，你有的吃的时候你不会吃到肚子痛。
So liking to eat ice cream, gelato, is not a problem as long as when there isn't any gelato to eat and you still areat ease with it, that's okay, not having any. And when they are actually gelatos for you to eat, that you're not going to eat to the point where you give yourself an upset stomach. And if that's the case, then there will be no issue, no problem.
好，那我所谈起一天到晚讲能所，这能所，比如说我在这边，你在那边，我看到你，所以我是我嘛，啊，你是我所看到的，就是能所，对不对？这是非常粗的，好，的一个这个因为是我外六境的，外六境了解我所是很容易的，就我看到你，我吃到冰激凌，就是 我是主嘛，哈，啊，那个是对象嘛，是很容易。但是内六识呢？内六识，我们的心识的我所呢？啊，它就是有一个比较复杂的说明哈。
So we kept bringing up, and we have been discussing this concept of subjectivity and objectivity for a long time. And the most often evoked example to illustrate this point is, there's a me here that I can see you, so I am the subject and you are the object of being seen. But this understanding of subjectivity and objectivity is rather coarse because it still belongs to the realm of external phenomenon. So I can see you or I can eat ice cream. There's a me here and the ice cream is an object to be eaten. So those are still external. But how about subjectivity and objectivity of the mind, consciousness? It's a lot more subtle. And we're going to take a look at them.
好，那其实呢，我们对于外六境的分别是来自于内六境的分别，来自于心识的分别哈。那我只是点到为止哈。那在唯识学里面有一个四分说，他把我们讲八识哦，每一个识呢，都每一个识还可以分成四个面向。好，那自证分。分，见分跟相分，就是能跟能见所见哈，然后一个正智正分来确认他说你这样看是对的，好，所以随便举一个第六意识哈，它就有这样的一个四个面向，所以你变成说我们刚刚说要正观察内视对吧？内的内境界八识里面就算是前六识来讲，每一个识都还有四个面相，这个面相里面最重要的是它有能见分跟相分的这个两缘之后呢，所有一切的识的分别开始起作用，所以还要能够看到每一识的什么我跟我所，这是非常不容易的。
So, the subjectivity and objectivity of the mind consciousness. So first of all, consciousness is divided into six, and then there are the seventh and the eighth. And the reason why we make all these distinctions of external phenomenon, that the root of it is coming from our internal phenomenon, internal consciousness phenomenon. And so borrowing the categorization, the theory from the mind consciousness only school, they further divide each of the consciousness into four different aspects, four aspect theory of each of the six consciousness. So we talked about how to go about and practice right contemplation. Keep in mind, actually, within each of these six consciousnesses, it could still further be divided into four aspects. There's within each consciousness, there's a subject and an object, and then interacting with these two, then there's a self-recognition and assurance of self-recognition, and which are all built on the condition of having this differentiation between subject and object.
好，想说地藏法门怎么讲这个哈？大家会不会觉得说好像在讲禅修哈？其实地藏法门是非常深奥的哈，因为地呢要支持一切，藏要长养一切，它本来就包含一切哈。那这个新的法门呢哈，我们一定要了解它的运作，不然我们任何禅修任何一个方法，我们很容易就会误以为我们自己开悟了，见性了，然后到达圣境了，然后其实你根本都不了解心的作用，也然后你也不了解怎么去净化它。那这边开宗明义指出来是什么，我跟我所是我们一个修行的一个key point 这样。
So some of you may be thinking that aren't we talking about sutras, Chittagabha Bodhisattva sutras? Then if that's the case, why do we have to talk about this? Haven't we deviated from the talk and start talking about meditation again? Actually, Chittagabha Bodhisattva, the meaning of it includes ground and treasure. And in order for ground to be bearing of everything, upholding everything, and treasure to be nurturing everything, it actually has to encompass all the phenomena in the world. And the teaching of the mind, the methods of the mind, is most critical. We need to have a clear understanding of how the mind works so that we won't get lost in the wood. Sometimes people practice one particular meditative practice method and they very quickly self-assure themselves that I have attained enlightenment or I've reached some sort of sainthood, not even having clear understanding of exactly how that mind works. And so in this sutra, what it's actually pointing and telling us is the way the mind process and interacts with phenomenon, and then also the cause of all the vexation is in this notion of subjectivity and objectivity.
好，这是哈经文所讲的哈。他说呢，我们的业哈是良田，有没有？好，然后呢？无名覆盖，但是呢，我所是他的因，就是他的种子。然后无名覆盖，爱为什么？就是滋润嘛，哈。所以呢，我们因为有我所，然后这个业，我们的业呢，又去滋润它，然后无名再覆盖它，哈。然后再加上哈，我们的那个爱恨情仇，哈。然后再去给它撒一点雨，然后它就长出一个什么东西来呢？等一下再讲，这棵树代表什么还没讲，然后它就不断的哇越长越大，对吧？所以它这边只是，然后但是呢，要讲的是说，所谓内六境外六境，不管怎么样，我们这个身跟心呢，所感知的这一切的一切现象来自于我所执，然后呢，但是他呢是依他而立，细数众缘的，好，要这样子真观察，好，那我所我也观不到，但是可以先下一步由依他而立，细数众缘来观察他，好，那就要讲到第二的定轮，修定的业轮。
So the sutra explains that the seed of all the issues or problem is in this notion of subjectivity and objectivity. And karma is the ground, it's a fertile ground where the seed is embedded. And ignorance covers it. And then our desires, hatred, or whatever, complex emotions, those act as rains to moisten. And it leads to the growth of this tree as to exactly what this tree symbolizes, we're going to talk about later. But ultimately, of all the phenomena, internal and the external phenomena that our mind interact with, the root source is this attachment to self and to a sense of subject and object, this attachment to the self. Yet, the text does explain to us that this sense of self is actually dependent arising and is intertwined with various conditions. So this is the point where we need to enter and further contemplate.
也就是说，我们必须要去了解任何一个现象的所依跟所缘，好，那就要介绍什么？第二个修定业轮是十二缘起观，哈。
So basically, it's telling us that we need to go in and try to understand all the conditions that co-arises that leads to any phenomenon.
当然了，在这个 这个经文的内容里面它并没有特别用十二缘起观这个字眼，而是你看中间的这个内容呢，它提到了三个流，一个是业流，一个烦恼流，一个苦流啊。为什么加一个流呢？因为它是什么川流不息嘛，就像流水一样一直一直流一直流，所以用业流、烦恼流、苦流来形容它那个现象的这个牵连而且不断。那这个三个流里面呢，就包含了十二缘起观的每一个环节。
And to go about to contemplate how everything arises according to conditions, then this leads us to the concept of the 12 dependent origination. This text inside did not directly evoke this term of 12 dependent origination. Instead, it talks about the streams of karma, streams of vexations and suffering. And the reason why the word stream or flow is used, it evokes the image of river. River flows continuously without stopping. And that's also the case with our karma, vexations and suffering. And so everything is interconnected, intertwined and unstopping. And this then points to how we need to go back to this concept of 12 dependent origination to understand how this goes about.
好，那我就把它简单的做成了一个图表哈。那什么是业流呢？业流在这边在十二因缘里面是讲行，好，无名行事的行。那行呢，我们可以很粗的解释说，你看哈，我们从一天醒来哈，其实醒来前你的头脑是不是已经有在动了？好，已经咔咔咔不知道想了多少东西了，然后起来啊。要不要起来啊？还是晚一点起来哈？然后从头，连我们在做梦的时候呢，脑子都在动。好，那这种行呢是很粗的，我们都可以知道说，对，一直在动，一直在动，它是没有办法停止的哈。然后，但是你如果修禅定的时候呢，你会发现你的心，我们的心像瀑布，没有办法截断它。好，那个种子的变化，心形的变化。没有办法，那这个行呢，它就是一种业力的一个什么，我们讲是驱动力，只要有行，一切现象就会一直在变化，所以它是一个业流。
So over here, we first focus on the karma stream, the stream of karma, and in this context, it's referring to volition, one of the aspects in the 12 dependent origination. So just take ourselves as an example. When we wake up in the morning, the mind is already racing. Millions of thoughts race through our mind. For instance, we debate about whether do I get up now or do I wake up sleeping a little bit longer. This type of volition that we're able to observe is actually very coarse. But when you actually go ahead and practice meditation, you will see that volition is a lot more subtle and it's actually unstoppable. So one analogy that I use to describe this is it's like a waterfall, that it's unstoppable and continuous. And this volition is what motivates everything, our further behaviors and actions.
那什么是烦恼流呢？从我们的爱，我们的其实我们的爱是一种烦恼，所谓的爱是包括恨，它有我们凡是遇到一个现象，爱的就想要，不爱的呢歼灭它，恨的，就是我们就是一直在取舍嘛，就是一直取舍，这个要我这个不要，我要搭公车还是搭 subway，我要怎么样，你每天都要一直做决定，一直做决定啊！这个想法你要的就跟着他去，不要的你还是跟着他去，因为你要用很多 的另外的想法去歼灭你那不喜欢的想法。不管怎么样，那个爱就是抓住我们，抓住我们的时候你就是取嘛， 然后就有什么？有了业。只要我们有爱有取，它就产生了一个什么？产生了一种业力。这个业力呢，会去滋润这个无明。好，直接跳过来，滋润这个无明。那从爱取有，然后再把它装到我们的无明里面增长它，那我们的行又没办法停住它，好，它就一直 circle， 一直 circle， 所以这个是烦恼流。
What about the stream of vexations? Desires is the root of vexations, but desire here we're talking about includes love and hatred and all these sorts of different kind of emotions.And why is it vexation? Because usually when we love something, then we crave it, we want it, want to get hold of it. When we hate something, then we try to destroy it, expel it, get rid of it. So we always are constantly making decisions of wanting this, wanting that. Do I take the subway or do I take the bus? It's unstoppable. And once desire has been activated, then it moves on to grasping, making decisions about this.Even for things that you don't like, you're also making decisions of not taking it or pushing it away. And then it leads to a creation of more karma, which then further nurtures our delusion and ignorance and then feeds on to volitions. And because we lack the wisdom to stop the volitions, so it just continues on and forms a cyclical cycle that never ends.
然后呢，苦流是什么？当我们有无明有爱的时候呢，然后又因为行这个业流没有停息，所以无明启动了行，行又启动了事，事呢又产生啊，我们来投胎了哈，就有名色六入，然后只要有六根哈，就会有触，对吧？触受。对不对？你因为有眼睛，你会看到不喜欢的人嘛？你也会看到喜欢的人嘛？对吧？啊，你就会那个这个血液哈，内分泌就会产生不同的啊这个反应。那你就会要还是不要哈？喜欢还是讨厌嘛？哈，然后就爱取有就有了嘛？哈，那有了爱取有哈，就注定有来生啊，所以不要怕死。只是你要 worry 来生呢是变成什么样啊，因为我们都没有办法跳脱爱与无明，注定有业就一定会有来生，但是来生希望它更好这样。
So how do we explain? How do we explain the stream of suffering?Because of ignorance, it leads to volition, thus leads to the functions of consciousness. With consciousness activated, it naturally leads to birth. And from birth, then naming and forms, and then also contact with the six sensory objects and organs. And once you, because you have eyes, your eyes will see people that you like or dislike, and it gives rise to different sort of hormones, different sort of reactions.Then leads to grasping, leads to sensations and graspings, and then give rise to the following life. So because there's karma and because there's love and grasping, then it's guaranteed that we're going to have, it will lead to future lives. So we don't really have to worry about the concept of dying. What we do have to be concerned about is when we are reborn into our next life, what kind of life are we going to be reborn into? Is it going to be better and more suitable for cultivation?
好，那所以我们再来看看这棵树哈。也就是说呢，因为有我跟我所，然后又因为我们有无明跟爱，在十二因缘里面看到，对不对？那因为又有业，这三个爱业无明哈，再加我所呢，整个长出来的那棵树叫做业流、烦恼流跟苦流，然后它就一直拖着我们在这个十二因缘法里面哈，就一直绕着我们。我们就轮回嘛，我们的身一直轮回，我们的心也一直轮回，不管是外六境内六境，都因为十二因缘法一直在轮回。
And so going back to this picture, the seed is the attachment, the notion of self and object. And then in addition, with the ingredients of ignorance, craving, desires, as well as karma, then it together give rise to this tree. And the tree actually represents the streams of karma, streams of volition, vexations, and the stream of sufferings. And so because the way our mind and body functions according to this 12 dependent origination, so continuous, it gives rise to further vexations as well as future lives in a way that's not stoppable.
所以其实在十二因缘法的修持哈，我们还可以逆转它，就是要怎么修嘛哈。那其实里面可以断十二这个十二因缘的这个哈，把它截下来的哈，就是要么断无明，要么就断爱，这是两个可以切的地方哈。然后在圆觉经里面就讲，爱是轮回的根本，想要跳出轮回呢哈。最好就是要把爱给 search， 就是断除哈，因为无明你看不见，你也很难断。那爱是可以很好的着手，那爱从哪里下手呢？哪一个意识？第几？一到八哪一个？我们讲八四有没有？从哪里下手？第七看不见。第六意识不是从前五识哈，你说我眼不见为净嘛哈，我讨厌他，我喜欢他，干脆我去山上没看见哈，就不是这样的，是第六意识哈，不要起分别爱取这样子。
So there's still hope though, by reversing this cycle of 12 dependent origination. And according to the sutra, the Sutra of Perfect Enlightenment, there are actually two places where you can break the cycle. One is to cut off ignorance. The other one is to cut off desires and cravings. These are the two junctures where you can cut off the cycle. Because having cravings and having these loves, it's the most fundamental drive that drives reincarnation.And to leave the cycles of life and birth, we need to cut off either ignorance, delusion, or cut off desires. But ignorance is hard to see. It's actually very deeply embedded, so it's not tangible. So what is more tangible, what we can actually work on is to cut off desires and this love, craving. And of the six consciousness,Which consciousness do we focus on to cut off love, to craving? Do you remember that we've been talking about this today? At which point, which of the six consciousness do we cut off? Do we cut off the eye, the sight, or the nose? It's actually the consciousness itself, the six consciousness that we can actually work on and cut off. So we don't blindfold ourselves, say, if I don't see anything, then I'm not attached to anything. That's not how you do it. You look into your consciousness, the sixth consciousness. And how do you go about to do that? You practice not making differentiations, not making distinctions, not grasping onto what you prefer and what you dislike.
那这个这边讲的断除这个爱呢，跟我之前比喻说啊，那我们还是可以吃冰淇淋嘛，对不对？它有一个不同的是说，当我们在喜欢吃冰淇淋的时候，不是说我要断绝看到冰淇淋跟瘦是吃冰淇淋，而是要去观察什么，这个爱是怎么产生的。这个爱在这个内六境里面，它是因为我所产生的，就是在断爱的过程中，并不是说要去 avoid 外六境的一个现象，而是要清楚知道正观察这个爱的产生来自于内六境，好，我们前六世怎么样操作的，才会产生这样的爱。那在这个操作的过程中， 其实最根本的原因是因为有我跟我所。
So when we talk about cutting off this craving, using the examples I gave earlier of eating gelato, it does not mean to not look at gelatos and not experience the tastes of gelato. In order to cut off craving, we go in to observe exactly how cravings arise. So we don't avoid the phenomenon. We don't avoid the external phenomenon nor the internal phenomenon. But we clearly observe where this craving comes from, which comes from the internal six internal phenomena. And the bottom line is the root of having this craving is the notion of subject and object.
好，那这个时候呢，就要怎么样？第三个方法就要观察什么？五取运。好，那等一下先再解释五取运。好，就是说，当我们知道，比如说，我们喜欢什么，不喜欢什么，哈，然后我们对这个世间设这个物质界跟心理界的反应的时候呢，要能够呢观察五取运是无常、苦、无我的。好，那它的它呢就像是如幻如焰，就是很像那个火的焰哈，或是水中的焰月，或是在梦中所见的东西一样哈。它是没有一个真实的个体，然后它是苦，就是说它不能苦就是因为它就是什么，你永远不满意嘛哈，然后你因为它无常一直在变化，所以要去观察这个。如果观察能够观察无取运好是无常苦无我的话呢，就能够怎么样，这个三解脱门好，顺三解脱门，空无相无愿，好，这三解脱门。
So to further the practice of contemplating and to cut off this craving, thenThis leads to a third method, contemplating of the five grasping aggregates. And so we use these five grasping aggregates as a focus for contemplation, and to see that these five grasping aggregates in essence are impermanent, suffering, and there's really no self, it's dependent. And these fivegrasping aggregates are stubborn and unmoving, but they are in truth just like illusions or flames and moons and water or scenes in dreams, that they are devoid of an intrinsic self. So to contemplate like this, then ultimately we'll be able to attain and to be in accordance with the forbearance of emptiness, of no intrinsic forms and no vows, which is the wisdom that we're seeking.
在这个地方呢，要提出来的就是说，这边的五取运哈，跟我们在《心经》讲的五蕴哈是不一样的，它比较粗。照见五蕴皆空，是已经要什么度一切苦厄了嘛哈，是比较高等的哈。我们现在还在讲五取运是什么呢？五蕴呢是讲一切的色法跟心法。要照见一切的色法性法皆空，好，那不管它就色法性法就这样，不管它是好的坏的内的外的粗的细的哈，远的近的，反正只要是色法跟心法，就是五蕴所构成的。好，但是在这里讲五取蕴是什么？除了刚刚讲的那个之外，是一切色法心法好的这个觉知。还是从烦恼而感召的，好，认为它是可取可得可住可着的，好，就是说认为你看到美好的东西其实是五蕴的造作，可是你还认为这美好的东西可是你可以得到的，好，这就是五取蕴取嘛，或是你觉得它是你可以拥有的，或是你可以让它永恒不变的哈， 然后你讨厌的人就好，可以把他歼，永远歼灭的哈。这种的想法就是五曲运，哦，它还不是五运哈。我们要先照见五曲运皆空，慢慢的才可能五运皆空。好，这边是先断除，好，先降，就是说照见五曲运哈是空无常哦苦的，无我空无常苦无我这样。
Over here, we need to make a distinction between five aggregates, the five aggregates versus the five grasping aggregates. Comparatively, the five grasping aggregate is more, it's coarse. It's a coarser concept than five aggregates. The five aggregates is referring to all the form and mind dharma are all created by these five aggregates. So anything that's internal, external, whether it's grand or it's minute and subtle, it's beautiful, it's ugly, far, close, all of these are the result of the five, created by the five aggregates. So in the Heart Sutra, we often talk about to observe and contemplate that all five aggregates are empty. That's what it's referring to. But here, we are actually talking about a coarser phenomenon, the five grasping aggregate. Five grasping aggregate is to mistakenly think that any of these phenomena created by five aggregates are actually attainable, graspable, ownable, you can hang on to it, or whatnot. So anything that's beautiful, it's actually a phenomenon of the five aggregates. But not only do you not see that, but you further have this mistaken notion that it's something that you can hang on to, that you can make it permanent. That is what we're referring to here, the five grasping aggregates. So to contemplate and to see through the five grasping aggregates is to contemplate that these five grasping aggregates are ultimately empty, and it lacks, it's not permanent, it lacks an intrinsic self and it's suffering.
好，所以呢，好，我们再来回到这个哈，我们讲了三个修定的方法了哈。从一开始呢，我们讲到，因为要佛陀说，第一个修定要正观察，好，六种境界，然后知道这六种境界，是来自于有我跟我所，好，然后再加上业哈。业的这个滋养哈，爱的灌溉，那无明的覆盖呢？那这个地方就要正观察，反正正六内六境外六境来自于我跟我所的分别哈，就是能所的分别。然后呢，第二个方法呢，就要从我所不好观察的时候，还可以从哪里呢？从这个我所哈。因为这样子我所长出来的这个业流烦恼流苦流的这个流转哈，十二因缘法里面去观察哈，也一样可以哈，是另外一个修定的一个业轮哈。那如果再不行呢，就是其实由业烦恼苦流哈产生的这种烦恼哈，就是从这个三个流产生的烦恼这个果实呢，其实就是我们的五曲运。那有五曲运呢齁产生的这个果实呢，我们也可以去观察说为什么齁，为什么我就是认为这个可以，这个为什么这个痛苦难受呢？因为我们觉得这个痛苦的境界齁没有改，不会改变。那为什么我们很这个中了什么乐透啊，或是忽然这股票赚了很多钱呢，哇就高兴得不得了呢？因为你会觉得说这个钱是你真正拥有的嘛，所以你就会让你很高兴。那这些都是五曲运，从这个里面呢要去正观察说这些一切的五曲运它其实是烦恼感召的，要必须把它，不要被它影响，不然的话呢，这五曲运的这个果实呢，它掉到地面上的时候，它会去长养什么？它会去丰润我们的业，然后这个业呢，又会去长养我跟我所， 这就是一个循环嘛，哈。那我找到一个比喻哈，来形容这个，就是有一个因是我所，然后因为过去的业力无明爱，然后这样哇，长养一棵树，树长了一个无取运的果子，这个果子呢掉到地上还继续，好，所以你这个是什么？这不是一加一等于二哦，这是什么？这以那个来讲是，那个什么，奇数哈，不是种一个业力你。一个我所哈，一个烦恼哈，在一棵树上长出不知道多少果子，然后你的业力哈是急速成长的哈。
So to recap, we have talked about three different methods of contemplation. First of all, is to have right contemplation of the six phenomenon that it all arises from the notion of subject and subjectivity and objectivity.But if the second method is that if contemplating subjectivity and objectivity is too difficult and too abstract, then we can further contemplate the streams of karma, vexation, and suffering that arises from the seeds of subjectivity and objectivity. And if contemplating these three streams of vexation, sufferings, and karma are still difficult, then we canthen further contemplate the five grasping aggregates that results from these three streams of karma, vexations, and sufferings to observe that everything is ultimately impermanent and devoid of intrinsic self. So why is it oftentimes we feel that pains are unbearable? That is because we have this delusion thinking that pain is there to stay, that it's not going to change. That's why it feels unbearable.Alternatively, why do we, if someone wins lottery or the stock market goes up, why do we feel overjoyed? Similarly, we feel that this is permanent, it's here to stay, so we are very happy about it. And this is because we don't see that these are actually, any of these phenomena are intrinsically impermanent.
Oh.
So because of this, Then further it will bear more fruits of karma and nurture the seed of subjectivity and objectivity and giving rise to this tree that bears more fruits. And when the fruits falls into the soil of karma, then bears even more vexations. So, this having the seed of subjectivity and objectivity, it does not only lead to, it's not one-to-one correspondence leading to one additional vexation. It actually grows exponentially, and that's why we need to go back to the root and cut it off.
那从这个描述到这里哈，其实以地藏法门来讲哈，它非常重要的一个部分。我们常常不是讲说什么。业报很重啊，业很重啊，我们应该要怎么样怎么样。其实在地藏法门还有就是禅修法门里面一个非常重要的一个修持是怎样，要修平等法。平等法就是去除爱。爱就是你有 preference 嘛齁。那在修平等法的过程中是非常重要的齁，就是至少你不会去灌溉什么灌溉我所，不会去灌溉你的无明，然后不会去加重你的业力。那最一个很容易下手，就是很明显下手的地方，就是从我们对于爱取的这个部分呢，能够修平等法。那因为它也是第六意识在判别的，所以它也很比较明显，很容易观察得到，然后很容易用方法来修炼它哈。那不然的话呢，我们造的业哈，不是真的不是一加一加一加一的，它可能是二的二次方再二次方再二次方哈，这样子累积的哈。
So what it all boils down is that when we are ambushed with all these very heavy karma, it's very important to practice the method of equanimity, and which is referring to we have these love and cravings and attachment which we need to try to get rid of and start practicing not making differentiation, not having preferences, so that we by Doing so, we would no longer be feeding further onto this notion of subjectivity and objectivity or delusions and karma. So cutting off cravings and attachment is a good place to start by practicing seeing everything as equal. It's something that's more tangible and comparatively easier to treat. And also, again, keep in mind that whatever karma that we create because of the preference and grasping, the consequences of it is not just additive. It actually grows exponentially. So we have to be extra careful of it.
好，最后呢，我不知道用这个例子哈适不适当，但是我觉得蛮贴切的哈。因为最近我们僧团有一位果祥法师哈，他在推自然农法。心灵环保的自然农法，其实它是非常环保、爱护我们环境的一种方式哈。它不要用农药，不打井，它也不除草，不那犁田啊，不伤害众生。然后慢慢的，越来越多的这个资料显示哈，比如说其中一个，他说你的果园呢，12年不要去除草啊，你的土壤越来越肥沃。然后果实果树欣欣向荣，然后果子呢就长得很多。好，显然呢，我们本来以为不好的杂草呢，其实它是对于这个土壤有很大的帮助的。好，但是我要举这个例子是说，假设呢，我们这块新田哈，这个叶的田哈，上面的杂草不除哈，好，那我们下面的那个土壤哈，那个叶呢就会越来越肥沃哈。然后上面的那个烦恼流就越来越欣欣向荣，然后我们的那个五曲运呢就果实累累那我用这样子举的意思是说，这个自然界也是这样，那我们的心地法门也一样的，所以我们必须一定要除草，不要以为说好我们怎么样，但是为什么持戒很重要，持戒就是在除草，好，不然的话所有的东西不就说以我们刚刚这个 model 来讲，真的我们所有的牵连，所有的烦恼，各式各样的烦恼流，是所以会业力肥沃，然后烦恼欣欣向荣。
So here I want to use an example. I'm not quite sure if it's perfectly, but it makes sense to me.Natural farming, the notion of natural farming, there is a Guo Xiang Fa Shi who has been very dedicated to this project, and it has been found that so when she tends to the field, she actually does not no longer weed it nor plow it so that you don't hurt or put pesticide on it. 可是他拔不拔草也不拔 not pulling out the weeds either.So there have been data actually that is gradually coming out that after 12 years of not weeding it, no pesticide, etc., the soil actually becomes more and more fertile, and the fruits that are grown in this piece of land field actually is thriving and giving off lots of fruits. So using that as a sort of reverse example, if the nature works this way, then with our mind,with karma. Karma are like the weeds, and the karma is the soil.
What is the weed?
Wu Ming.
Oh, and ignorance is the weeds.
No.
That we actually have to pull them and tend to it. Otherwise, the soil of karma will actually become more and more fertile and further feeding onto the seed of subjectivity and objectivity. So do not think that we don't have to tend to it, because if we don't tend to it, it's actually going to grow exponentially. And this then points to the importance of upholding precepts. Upholding precept is the way for us to tend to the field and weed it and to make it clean so that we don't further feed on to make the soil of karma and ignorance more and more fertile.
所以第三佛轮哈。这个还在第修定哈，第三佛轮佛陀就讲一章好，他的篇幅非常厚，讲如何持戒。
So the third Buddha chakra actually focuses on how to uphold precepts, and it's actually a very extensive, a very rich chapter.
好，那我们下一次呢就要讲 刚刚讲的那些其实都不好修，但是我们要知道，那佛陀介绍一个，为我们介绍一个方便法门，叫做出入习观、属习观，来修定。那从出入习观的修定当中呢，它就会引发我们怎么去断除五取蕴。好，那这是我们下一次下礼拜会讲的。
So next time we're actually going to talk about the fourth method of contemplating inhale and exhale, because after all those first three methods we talked about are comparatively abstract and it's not always very tangible. So then Buddha taught this method of observing, contemplating inhale and exhale as a way to gradually get rid of the five grasping aggregates. So that will be our focus of discussion next time.